Welcome back to Standby Line, the only podcast where AJ no longer has a squeaking chair.
I know. It genuinely, Tim says that very seriously because he watched me finish putting it together in the studio. After so long, like our first episode I recorded in that chair. Our very first episode I recorded in that chair about a week ago. My chair, which I very hatefully dubbed Old Squeaker, finally bit the bullet and decided to crack on one side. All the way down. Just completely gone. If you leaned all the way back in that chair, it would fall apart. But today, I finally replaced it. And I have a new office chair.
The nostalgia in me is gonna miss it being annoying, but the editor in me is saying burn in hell.
Yeah. I want that chair. I have wanted a new office chair for so long that when it broke, I could barely hide the smile on my face. When I went up to my parents, I was like, hey, I need a new office chair.
I'm your host, Tim, as always, and my co-host, AJ.
I'm just here to sit here and look pretty. And sit still, ideally, so the chair doesn't squeak. But now I don't have to sit still anymore. See, I just readjusted myself. You didn't hear a thing.
The wonders of modern technology.
I know, right? Imagine.
And Happy New Year to everyone.
Oh, yeah, this is coming out on New Year's Day.
Yes, it is.
Our schedule worked out really weird that way. Imagine if we had an episode coming out on Christmas. We will one of these years.
Let me take a look at the calendar real quick. What's next year?
Probably like 2027 by that, right? Or 2028, maybe?
We'll get to it when we get
now
to
I'm flipping through. Yeah, 2028.
All right. So set a reminder. December 25th, 2028. We'll have an episode out.
Assuming the world doesn't end, this podcast will go on as long as Tim and I are alive. At this point,
yeah.
If it's lasted this long, I don't see a reason it'd fall apart now.
And as always, thank you to our VIP patrons across the Conman, Rutzelustig, and Darian Smart.
And thank you to you, the listener at home, especially in Germany, because Germany has once again topped our listener charts.
Yes, we got our stats for the year, and the city with the most downloads is Frankfurt.
Honestly, I'm impressed. The rest of you really got to compete more. I don't even think it was close. I think Frankfurt was like first by like two times, second place.
No, and then it was the New York area where I am.
Which, yeah, we all know Tim walks around forcing people to listen to us at gunpoint.
For legal reasons, that was a joke.
But honestly, I feel like all of the authorities in the New York area have more important things to worry about. I feel like a podcaster going around threatening people to listen to his podcast is honestly like a two in the New York area.
But genuinely, like it was not even close.
It really wasn't. That's why I'm so impressed.
Okay, so seriously, I know we said this last year, but if you are one of these fans in Germany, like, leave us a review, email us, hit us up on Twitter or Instagram, tell us who you are and how you found us.
Genuinely, we are so curious.
And then please give us money because we really need it.
Yeah, I would love to accept euros.
Alright, so, for the new year, what better way than a new year, a sign of Epcot's rebirth, so to speak, the central figure around which the renovations of the park have been going on for quite some time now.
Quite some time is perhaps the understatement of the decade. Lo and behold, and I've experienced this personally in the last 2 weeks, Epcot is reopening. The nature is healing. The walls have come down in front of Spaceship Earth. Epcot is finally, like, mostly reopened.
Is there any part of the walls that are still up at this point?
A little bit, yeah. There are certain, like, really small stretches that are probably still gardening work that needs to be done. And the buildings and World Celebration aren't complete yet.
But, like, the majority of the interventions area is open now.
Yeah, for the most part. They just have some finishing details to put in, like, on the old Club Cool building and stuff like
okay.
that.
Okay, all right.
They look like they're mostly done. They look like they're pretty much just doing decorative paneling at this point.
Which, yeah.
Yeah, and that's something that is bound to take a little bit longer.
But so the big attraction for Epcot's renovations is Moana, the Journey of Water.
Which is, as we have been building up for oh so long, because again, it does genuinely mystify me, the first thing we've talked about on the podcast that is open since I moved to Florida that Tim has done before me.
And this was entirely happenstance. I did it when I was down in October because I knew I'm probably not going to be in Florida next year, and AJ just didn't until a few weeks ago.
Yeah, my family, because this one was so low impact, my family was willing to do the previews without me. And I said, yeah, go ahead, because it genuinely doesn't matter to me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they did it without me, and then Tim was like, oh yeah, we were waiting for you to get to Epcot. We went and did Journey of Water, and I went, oh, I haven't done Journey of Water yet. And both of us just kind of looked at each other and went, huh. And then I decided this had to be our marketing shtick for the episode.
Because it's probably never going to happen again.
Probably not.
To make a long story of my feelings on this short, I think that this actually captures the intent of what Epcot should be, in that it's education wrapped up in an entertaining package better than anything they've done for the last two odd decades.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people had that scare, especially around the time that Cosmic Rewind was announced and was, you know, starting to begin construction, that Epcot was going to slip away from being the more, I don't necessarily want to say intellectual park, but you understand kind of what I'm going for, where it was built on this idea of being vaguely educational and being vaguely grounded in some form of reality.
Right.
But yeah, I have to say Journey of Water was a really fun way to blend the new concept of letting ourselves explore these more fantastical IPs and stuff like that, and use that as kind of, to use a dog metaphor, I suppose I'll say the peanut butter we're putting on the pill to make them swallow.
not a bad metaphor at all.
Because let's face it, every kid that's taken a science class in elementary school has had to learn about the water cycle, and every kid that's taken a science class in elementary school probably hated learning about the water cycle.
Was the most annoying? No, but it's just like it's water.
Why did it matter? It's water.
It's water. You're 8 years old. You just want to snort pixie sticks.
Exactly. I'm 21 and I still want to snort pixie sticks. Anything harder is illegal, so you know I have to settle for legal reasons. Again, that's a joke. But yeah, Journey of Water. It is exactly what it sounds like. It is a story of how water moves through the environment.
Yeah, all the exhibits are set up as different interactive activities, I guess, for lack of a better word, related to how the water cycle occurs in nature, how condensation becomes clouds, they come down as precipitation, seep into the groundwater, then come back up and start the whole thing over again.
To say that the activities had much to do with how the water cycle functions, probably not entirely true.
Yeah, that's being a bit generous.
They are all fun, and they are all like trying to be like metaphorical about the way water interacts with the water cycle.
Yeah, I don't think the water cycle in nature actually has a phenomenon by which water can raise and lower at will.
Yeah, I don't think that's quite how it works. And I don't think water can sense human intent like one of the signs said it could, but yeah. That, you know, we dipped into the special effects budget a little too much and needed a reason to justify it. Somewhere out there, there's a kid that took that way too literally and thinks water can just sense when people are about to walk through it now.
If you try it and it works, though, please let us know.
Yeah, please. I'm just imagining somebody doing like the fog wall animation from Dark Souls, where they just kind of slowly trudge through it and it like absorbs around them. But yeah, I think the most interesting thing about Journey of Water is that visually speaking, it is very much an anomaly to the section of the park it's in.
Yeah. So to describe it, I guess a canyon would be the easiest comparison to make.
Yeah.
You're basically surrounded on either side by big rocky outcroppings, and then the water takes place in grottos among them.
Mm-hmm. And to be entirely clear about where this is situated in the park, it's right across from the seas with Nemo and friends. So you have relatively clean-looking, like, late 70s, early 80s-looking buildings. And then right across the way, there's a bunch of rocks.
So if you're going to Nemo from say, Spaceship Earth, you're looking ahead, and you see the pavilion straight ahead of you. And then you turn your head slightly to the left, and it's just...
massive rock outcroppings.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, you see a little piece of a little jet of water just go shooting out above it. Which, I think, goes back to the idea of how it blends the idea of what Cosmic Rewind, what people were worried Cosmic Rewind was going to be and what Epcot should be. It very much so looks good. Don't get me wrong. It's just, it's very much so an outstanding feature in Epcot, much like the Star Jumper is in front of Cosmic Rewind. Like, it sticks out like a sore thumb, and that's kind of the point.
Admittedly, I really think this is only a problem at ground level. If you're actually looking at it, like, from the monorail, it seems to blend in a lot better.
Yeah, and that's really weird to me, because I remember when I first saw it from the monorail, and I was like, no, it looks good like that. And I was like, then why? When I walk up to it, does it look so weird?
Yeah.
And admittedly, once you get inside of it, and you're, like, completely surrounded by the rock outcroppings, it feels like its own land.
Yeah, you do very much feel isolated from the rest of the park.
Yeah, because you can't see anything of the rest of the park until, like, the very end. Because it basically takes you in one big loop through an area, and then it kind of puts you up pretty close to where you walked in.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, genuinely, I feel like they almost went to, like, Pandora levels of, like, you are in your own little world and intentionally built the visibility to block off the rest of the park to do that. Which I think was a nice touch. Because genuinely, I kind of forgot that, like, I wasn't in an isolated corner in the park, and I was theoretically, like, within spitting distance of World Celebration.
Which, I don't mind the isolation in itself, but I think it could have been used to better effect if it wasn't, like, right dab in the middle of the central thoroughfare. Like, if they had put it, like, between where the land pavilion is and where the seas pavilion is, and it was something you had to walk through along the edge of the park, I think that would have served a lot better.
I think that's fair. I think that is a lot of real estate that cuts off sight lines across the park in ways that could be beneficial to foot traffic.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're standing over at World Celebration, now you're not going to see Nemo and friends. You're just going to see the rocks from Moana, but you're only going to see the backside, where you have no clue what it is. You may go investigate, but more likely than not, you're going to look at that and go, huh, and walk away.
Speaking of how you may investigate or not, this was weird to get into the first day, because, like, even the one week, even the couple days I was there, it was going back and forth on if you needed a virtual queue or not.
Yeah. And as someone who only did it on previews or days where Epcot was dead, or that's, like, my entire connection to it, because my family did it all on previews, and then my dad and I did it when the park was dead. We never had to deal with that, but I do know that they were really weird about the virtual queue for this one, and I feel like it was part of them trying to experiment with how to use virtual queues.
It was going day by day. Like, that first day I was down there, and we went to do behind the scenes. That day you needed one, but then the Friday I did it, you didn't.
Yeah. And I'm not quite sure what that was about. Part of me thinks it might have been about park load to make sure that the area wasn't very swamped, because it is a pretty tightly packed area. If it gets a decent crowd, you're going to be shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah, it can get a little claustrophobic in there.
Now, admittedly, like I said, I did it when the park was dead. There were maybe 30 people in the entire area, which is a decent crowd, but not enough to where the crowd felt, like, packed.
Yeah.
Like, we all had time to kind of walk in and out of activities at our own will. And it gave us enough people to do the line thing. There's a big line where if people raise their hands in the air, it summons, like, a jet of water, and if everybody does it at once, it makes it, like, way bigger, and my dad gets such a massive kick out of
it. It is really cool to see in action.
It is so much fun, and my dad will run out to the center area and start, like, grabbing people, not physically, but, like, summoning people over to the activity to see it when the entire line does it. It's so funny. We did it once because he wanted to show me what it looked like, so he started, like, gathering people up to go do it all at once so I could see it. And then we did it once, and I went, oh, that's really cool. I really enjoyed that. I walked off to go see another activity. And I turn around because I realize he's not following me. He's doing it again. He got an entirely different group of people together just to do it again. And I go walk over to him and I get, you get a really big kick out of that, don't you? And he went, it's really cool.
And honestly,
I kind of chuckle and I'm like, yeah, it is. That's valid. And then I walk away and I hear him 3, 2, and I turn around. He's got a completely different third group of people. It's been no more than a minute. My dad has an uncanny power for attracting people to that one activity just to get the big wave. It's incredibly funny. And I think that probably is the activity that most people will remember from Journey of Water.
One other one that sticks out is the one that has the jets of water flowing down over a cave where you try to go through, but then the jets stop as you're walking under it, so nobody actually gets splashed.
Yeah, that is a really nice one.
Which, it's like, it's a hot floor today, you can get me a little wet.
I was like, yeah, and admittedly, if you're engaging in all the activities, you will more than likely get decently wet, if only your hand. Your hand will absolutely get wet doing this. If only because your hand is, like, actively engaged with water in several activities. Like that one where you get to see the ripple effect and you just got to stick your hand in a jet of water.
That's a good one. Yeah.
I enjoyed that one. I enjoyed that one a lot. I love ripple effect. It's just it's fun to watch water ripple. I don't know what it is about it. Admittedly, I am very easy to entertain.
I think it just gets us to something primal in us.
Monkey brain like it when water goes sploosh.
Exactly.
And I will say, I also think the outcroppings were really cool because I don't know if a lot of people noticed this. It didn't sound like a lot of people had noticed it when I had gone. A lot of details are in that in those rock outcroppings.
There are a lot of details. The only one that matters is that one of the rocks is in the shape of Pua.
That is very true. Absolutely amazing. 10 out of 10. No notes. I appreciated that the center of the area with the ripple effect activity is supposed to look like, what's the crab's name?
Oh,
Krakatoa?
Yeah, that's it. I think.
Something like that. Because I remember the line from Shiny. I just don't remember specifically what the name was, but I remember like the vague syllables. Tamatoa.
That was it. Yeah.
I think I'm thinking of Krakatoa because we were talking about X-Men earlier. So my brain went to Krakoa.
And the big image that everybody remembers from this, at the very end, there is a giant topiary of Tafiti, and
it is massive.
It looks as good as you've heard it does. So any pictures you may have seen of it really don't do the scale of this thing justice?
No, genuinely. Like, I had seen some of the pictures of it, especially from some of the promotional material, and because they always take it at that downward angle looking up towards the sky, I kind of thought it was like, I thought the angle was exaggerating a little bit, and we were talking like maybe 8 or 9 feet. No, this thing is at least like 17, 18 feet tall.
Closer to 20, I think, honestly.
Probably. Because that was the kind of thing I realized when my dad and I walked over to it. I looked at it and I went, whoa, that is big. Because it was way bigger than I thought it was. And then my dad and I went and stood next to it to get our picture taken. And I realized, like, I am no more than a third of this thing's height.
Yeah.
At absolute maximum. I cannot be more than a third of this thing.
And it comes as a genuine surprise when you're going through, because, like, the outcroppings hide it entirely before you actually supposed to see it.
Yeah, it's a complete surprise. But yeah, like as far as something that comes as like a complete surprise at the end of the attraction, I'm not necessarily surprised there was a giant topiary of Tafiti, I suppose I should say. I was surprised it was as big as it was, and I was surprised I didn't see it until the end.
Well, obviously we weren't surprised because they were marketing the hell out of it.
That's true. Yeah, it was like the centerpiece of the marketing. And I think everybody could have expected that a Moana attraction about nature and learning about nature probably would have ended with Tafiti.
Actually, that brings up a good point that regardless of how you feel about the integration of more IP into Epcot, I think Moana itself manages to strike a good balance of using the IP and actually getting across the intended educational message of the attraction.
Yeah, personally, I think Moana was one of the best choices they could have made in terms of an IP to integrate to the extent that they did. I think Coco works well, the way it's integrated into the Mexico Pavilion, but I don't think that's to the extent that Moana is integrated into Epcot through Journey of Water. I think Ratatouille was a cute choice for France, even though I don't necessarily think that it really should have existed. I think Remy's Adventure is a fine ride on its own. I'm not going to lie. I think it's a good ride. I don't see why it should have been at Epcot, other than the fact that there's a France pavilion.
But yeah, it's more than just how the little placards that are explaining what exactly is happening have like references to how this affects like Moana's world. It's just the aesthetic of the rocks contrasted with the pictographs they use to show the cycle lines up perfectly in it, and is a great way to keep kids' attention for this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Genuinely, across the board, I do think that this was a really good example of the way educational IP integration can be done in a way that, frankly, I don't think we have seen as explicitly as this since the Seas, when it became Nemo and Friends.
Yeah, I'd agree.
And I think just as many ways that Moana is emblematic of the new direction of Epcot, I think Moana is also very much a callback to that older spirit of Epcot.
It's showing how you don't necessarily have to give up one for the other.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess if anything, you could kind of call it a return to form.
I was not super excited for this going in, but honestly, I was surprised by how much I enjoyed it.
Oh yeah, I had a lot of fun with it. I thought it was going to be fun. I thought it was going to be one of those things where it's like, oh, this is nice. This is very novel and I enjoy it. And then I just never go back because that's the way I am with a lot of attractions that I've got. But yeah, this is one where I'm like, yeah, I could totally see myself just coming back through here for fun if I have nothing going on in the day.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a walkthrough, so it works if you just want to get away from the main rush of the crowds and just like relax for a bit.
It will become my new Hall of Presidents at Epcot. That used to be American Adventure, and I just kind of dealt with it. I think O Canada is still closed, isn't it?
I believe so, yeah.
Because it used to be O Canada, and then they closed O Canada, and it became American Adventure because I didn't like Sights of France, and then they changed what Sights of France was for a while. I don't know what it is now. Is it back to Sights of France?
I don't even know if they're still playing a movie in that theater.
Neither do I. I don't check. I don't care. I stop in France long enough to get my orange vodka slush and I leave.
Pretty much, yeah.
All France is a stopping point on the way to Morocco. Which in itself is only a stopping point on the way to Japan.
Look, you look us in the eye and tell us the last time you went to see the France travel log.
We're waiting. We'll be here a while. I think the last time I walked in there with all seriousness when I was not just trying to find someone was 2017, 2018, maybe.
I genuinely think I may not have been in that building in 20 years.
Yeah, there's nothing going on in there. There's a little bit of merch in a place where you can get, like, chocolate croissants.
No, actually, like that's a lie. I've been in the building a few times because the lobby has some effects for the Epcot, like World Showcase games, but I have not sat through the movie in 20 years.
Yeah, no. I think I did in 2012 the first time we came. But after that, I genuinely don't think I've said.
My dad was the one that I would suggest that we do it, and the rest of us were like, "All right, that's what you want."
Yeah, sure.
And he was the first to fall asleep.
Yeah, ain't that always how it goes with dads? Well, because see, at least they have the courtesy to give you sitting, like actual like seating.
That's true.
In that theater, yeah. As opposed to China, where you just have to stand there.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that's about it for Journey of Water. Honestly, a surprise sleeper hit of 2023.
Yeah, genuinely. I know it sounds like we haven't said a lot about this, but that's partially because I really don't want to give you a play-by-play, because I feel like giving you a play-by-play robs you of getting to see a lot of it for yourself if you ever come down to Epcot.
And this is an experience that's worth going into with fresh eyes.
Genuinely. We could give you the play-by-play. I'm sure some of you expect us to give you the play-by-play, but not only would the play-by-play undersell this by a very large degree, I also feel like the play-by-play would ruin it for you if you ever do eventually go. Because I walked in only knowing about that one activity that my dad really enjoys, because I saw a video of him doing it, and I loved it. I feel like if I had walked in knowing everything I was going to see, it would be moderately less impressive.
Yeah. All right, so that's going to do it for us. Next time, we will be doing the results of the December viewer poll, which, thanks to a suggestion from AJ's family, is going to be defunct nighttime entertainment.
Yeah, thanks for that one, Mom. I genuinely didn't have any ideas, and she just spatballed that out in the car.
Yeah, not one we would have thought of, but there's a lot we can do with that.
I would not have thought of that in a million years, but she said it, and I went, oh my god, that's great.
Yeah, at the time of recording this, the poll is still ongoing, so don't know what it's going to be yet, but until then, we'll see you real soon.
Doodles.